Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Atlantic Magazine program brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your volunteer reader today. I'll be reading articles from the online edition of the Atlantic Magazine. All of them were published in November of 2024. We'll begin with this article from the politics section. Trump won. Now what? The United States is about to become a different kind of country. By David Frum. Donald Trump has won and will become president for the second time. Those who voted for him will now celebrate their victory. The rest of us need to prepare to live in a different America, a country where millions of our fellow citizens voted for a president who knowingly promotes hatred and division, who lies blatantly, shamelessly, every time he appears in public, who plotted to overturn an election in 2020, and, had he not won, was planning to try again in 2024. Above all, we must learn to live in an America where an overwhelming number of our fellow citizens have chosen a president who holds the most fundamental values and traditions of our democracy, our Constitution, even our military, in contempt. Over the past decade, opinion polls have showed Americans' faith in their institutions waning, but no opinion poll could make this shift in values any clearer than this vote. As a result of this election, the United States will become a different kind of country. When he was last in the White House, the president-elect ignored ethics and security guidelines, fired inspectors general and other watchdogs, leaked classified information, and used the Department of Homeland Security in the summer of 2020 as if it were the interior ministry of an authoritarian state, deploying U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Coast Guard troops in American cities. Trump actively encouraged the January 6, 2021 insurrection at our Capitol. When he left the White House, he stole classified documents and hid them from the FBI. Because a critical mass of Americans aren't bothered by that list of transgressions, any one of which would have tanked the career of another politician, Trump and his vice president-elect, J.D. Vance, will now try to transform the federal government into a loyalty machine that serves the interests of himself and his cronies. This was the essence of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, and its architects, all Trump fans, will now endeavor to make it become reality. Trump will surely try again to dismantle America's civil service, replacing qualified scientists and regulators with partisan operatives. His allies will help him build a Department of Justice that does not serve the Constitution, but instead focuses on harassing and punishing Trump's enemies. Trump has spoken in the past of using the Federal Communications Commission and the Internal Revenue Service to punish media organizations and anyone else who crosses him, and now he will have the chance to try again. Perhaps the greater and more insidious danger is not political repression or harassment, but corruption. Autocratic populists around the world, in Hungary, Turkey, Venezuela, have assaulted institutions designed to provide accountability and transparency in order to shift money and influence to their friends and families. And this may happen in America, too. This is not just a theoretical threat. As loyalists take over regulatory agencies, filling not only political but also former civil service jobs, American skies will become more polluted, American food more dangerous. As a result of this massive shift in the country's bureaucratic culture, Trump-connected companies will prosper, even as America becomes less safe for consumers, for workers, for children, for all of us. American foreign policy will also reflect this shift toward kleptocracy. In his first term, Trump abused the powers of his office, corrupting American foreign policy for his personal gain. He pressured the Ukrainian president to launch a fake investigation of his political opponent, altered policy toward Turkey, Qatar, and other nations in ways that suited his business interests, even used the Secret Service to funnel government money to his private properties. In a second term, he and the people around him will have every incentive to go much further. Expect them to use American foreign policy and military power to advance their personal and political goals. There are many things a re-elected President Trump cannot do, but there are some things he can do. One is to cut off aid to Ukraine. The Biden administration has 3 months to drop all half measures and rush supplies to Ukraine before Trump forces a Ukrainian surrender to Russia. If there's anything in the American arsenal that Ukraine might successfully use, other than nuclear weapons, send it now before it's too late. Another thing Trump can do is to impose further tariffs and to intensify a global trade war not only against China, but also against former friends, partners, and allies. America First will be America alone, no longer Ronald Reagan's city on a hill, but now just another great power animated by predatory nationalism. Around the world, illiberal politicians who seek to subvert their own democracies will follow America's lead. With no fear of American criticism or reaction, expect harassment of press and political opponents in countries such as Mexico and Turkey to grow. Expect the Russian-backed electoral cheating recently on display in Georgia and Moldova to spread. Expect violent rhetoric in every democracy. If the American president can get away with it, others will conclude that they can too. The autocratic world, meanwhile, will celebrate the victory of someone whose disdain for the rule of law echoes and matches their own. They can assume that Trump and Vance will not promote human rights, will not care about international law, and will not reinforce our democratic alliances in Europe and Asia. But the most difficult, most agonizing changes are the ones that will now take place deep inside our society. Radicalization of a part of the anti-Trump camp is inevitable, as people begin to understand that existential issues such as climate change and gun violence will not be tackled. A parallel process will take place on the other side of the political spectrum, as right-wing militias, white supremacists, and QAnon cultists are re-energized by the election of the man whose behavior they have, over 8 years, learned to imitate. The deep gaps between America will grow deeper. Politics will become even angrier. Trump won by creating division and hatred, and he will continue to do so throughout what is sure to be a stormy second term. My generation was raised on the belief that America could always be counted upon to do the right thing, even if belatedly. Reject the isolationism of America First and join the fight against Nazism. Fund the Marshall Plan to stop communism. Extend the promise of democracy to all people without regard to race or sex. But maybe that belief was true only for a specific period, a unique moment. There were many chapters of history in which America did the wrong thing for years or decades. Maybe we are living through such a period now. Or maybe the truth is that democracy is always a close-run thing, always in contention. If so, then we too must, as people in other failing democracies have learned to do, find new ways to champion wobbling institutions and threatened ideas. For supporters of the American experiment in liberal democracy, our only hope is education, organization, and the creation of a coalition of people dedicated to defending the spirit of the Constitution, the ideals of the founders, the dream of freedom. More concretely, public civic education campaigns to replace the lessons no longer taught in schools, teams of lawyers who can fight for the rule of law in courts, grassroots organizing, especially in rural and small-town America, citizens and journalists working to expose and fight the enormous wave of kleptocracy and corruption that will now engulf our political system. Many of those shattered by this result will be tempted to withdraw into passivity or recall into performative radicalism. Reject both. We should focus instead on how to win back to the cause of liberal democracy a sufficient number of those Americans who voted for a candidate who denigrated this nation's institutions and ideals. That completes the first article, Trump Won, What Now? By Atlantic staff writer David Frum. The next article is What Trump Understood and Harris Did Not. The former and future president got one big thing right. By David Graham. Ironically, it may have been Donald Trump's discipline that won him a return trip to the White House. The former and future president is infamous for his erratic approach to politics, which was on flagrant display in the past couple of weeks of the campaign. But Trump consistently offered a clear message that spoke to Americans' frustration about the economy and the state of the country and promised to fix it. Throughout the campaign, Trump told voters that President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and undocumented immigrants were responsible for inflation, and that he would fix the problem. His proposals were often incoherent and nonsensical. For example, Trump promised to both whip inflation and also institute enormous tariffs, a combination nearly all economists agree is impossible. The mass deportation that Trump has promised would also likely drive up prices, rather than soothing the economy. But in a country where roughly three-quarters of Americans feel that things are on the wrong track, a pledge to fix things was potent. Trump may be the most negative mainstream candidate in American history. Observers, including my colleague Peter Werner, have noted the contrast between Trump's disposition and Ronald Reagan's sunny optimism. But in a strange way, Trump does offer a kind of hope. It is not a hope for women with complicated pregnancies, or LGBTQ people, or immigrants, even legal ones, but for those who fit under Stephen Miller's rubric that America is for Americans and Americans only, Trump promised a way out. "We're going to help our country heal," Trump said in remarks early this morning. "We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we've made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that." You can contrast that with the message coming from Kamala Harris and the Democratic Party, which was more outwardly hopeful, but suffered from a serious, perhaps unfixable, flaw. Harris won praise for her positive campaign message, especially in the immediate weeks after Joe Biden dropped out of the race and she became the nominee. Biden had spent months warning darkly about Trump's threat to democracy, but Harris offered something more forward-looking. Explicitly, "We're not going back," she told voters. Harris promised to protect things like Social Security and Medicare, and warned that Trump would ruin everything that was great about America. This was a fundamentally conservative answer, coming from a Democratic Party that, as I wrote last year, has become strikingly conservative. But it came at a time when too many voters were disgusted with the status quo. Democrats may have been slow to take seriously the economic pain of inflation. In its first 2 years, the Biden administration was single-handedly focused on reviving and restructuring the economy after COVID, and treated inflation more as a transitory annoyance than a long-term danger. But also it seemed to have concluded that it lacked a good answer to inflation. The administration argued with frustration that inflation was a worldwide trend caused by COVID, and pointed out that inflation in the U.S. had dropped faster than in peer countries, and that the American economy was running better than any other. All of this was true and also politically unhelpful. You can't argue people into feeling better with statistics. In theory, the midsummer switch from Harris to Biden gave Democrats a chance to reset. But Harris struggled to create distance from Biden. When she was offered chances to do so, she demurred. In early October, the hosts of The View asked her what she'd have done differently from the president, and she replied, "There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact, the work that we have done." Republicans were delighted and made that a staple of attack ads and stump speeches. Whether this was out of loyalty to her boss or some other impulse, it's not clear that Harris would have been able to pull off a more radical switch. She was still the Democratic nominee, and voters around the world have punished incumbent parties in recent elections. Her coalition meant she couldn't run an aggressively protectionist or anti-immigrant campaign, even if she had been so inclined. Her strategic decision to court centrist and Republican voters closed off moving very far to the left on economics, though past campaigns do not offer clear evidence that would have been a winner either. Besides, Democrats had a very empirical case that they had done to steward the economy was very successful. They just had no political case. In a bitter turn for Democrats, Trump will now benefit from their governing successes. If he truly attempts to, or succeeds at, speedily deporting millions of people or instituting 60% tariffs, he will drive inflation higher and wreck the progress of Biden's term. But Trump's own political instincts and the influence of many very wealthy people around him may temper that. Having clearly promised to fix the problem and vanquished his enemies, he'll now be able to declare a swift victory. That completes the article, "What Trump Understood and Harris Did Not," by Atlantic staff writer David Graham. This next article is from the technology section. X is a white supremacist site. Elon Musk has made one of Twitter's most glaring problems into a core feature on X, by Charlie Warzel. X has always had a Nazi problem. I've covered the site, formerly known as Twitter, for more than a decade, and reported extensively on its harassment problems, its verification, and then de-verification, of a white nationalist, and the glut of anti-Semitic hatred that roiled the platform in 2016. But something is different today. Heaps of unfiltered posts that plainly celebrate racism, anti-Semitism, and outright Nazism are easily accessible and possibly even promoted by the site's algorithms. All the while, Elon Musk, a far-right activist and the site's owner, who is campaigning for and giving away millions to help elect Donald Trump, amplifies horrendous conspiracy theories about voter fraud, migrants run amok, and the idea that Jewish people hate white people. Twitter was always bad if you knew where to look, but because of Musk, X is far worse. X and Musk did not respond to requests for comment for this article. It takes little effort to find neo-Nazi accounts that have built up substantial audiences on X. Thank you all for 7K, one white nationalist meme account posted on October 17th, complete with a Heil Hitler emoji reference. 1 week later, the account, which mostly posts old clips of Hitler speeches and content about how Hitler was right, celebrated 14,000 followers. One post, a black-and-white video of Nazis goose-stepping, has more than 187,000 views. Another racist and anti-Semitic video about Jewish women and black men, clearly AI-generated, has more than 306,000 views. It was also posted in late October. Many who remain on the platform have noticed X decaying even more than usual in recent months. I've seen so many seemingly unironic posts like this on Twitter recently. "This is getting insane," one X user posted in response to a meme that the far-right influencer Stu Peters recently shared. It showed an image of Adolf Hitler holding a telephone with overlaid text reading, "Hello, 2024? Are you guys starting to get it yet?" Peter appended the commentary, "Yes, we've noticed." The idea is simply that Hitler was right, and X users ate it up. As of this writing, the post has received about 67,000 likes, 10,000 reposts, and 11.4 million views. When Musk took over in 2022, there were initial reports that hate speech, anti-black and anti-Semitic slurs, were surging on the platform. By December of that year, one research group described the increase in hate speech as unprecedented, and it seemed to only have gotten worse. There are far more blatant examples of racism now, even compared with a year ago. In September, the World Bank halted advertising on X after it promoted ads were showing up in the replies to pro-Nazi and white nationalist content from accounts with hundreds of thousands of followers. Search queries such as "Hitler was right" returned posts with tens of thousands of views. They're indistinguishable from the poison once relegated to the worst sites on the internet, including 4chan, Gab, and Stormfront. The hatred isn't just coming from anonymous fringe posters either. Late last month, Clay Higgins, a Republican congressman from Louisiana, published a racist, threatening post about the Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, saying they're from the nastiest country in the Western Hemisphere. Then he issued an ultimatum. "All these thugs better get their mind right and their ass out of their country, out of our country, before January 20th, he wrote in the post, referencing Inauguration Day. Higgins eventually deleted the post at the request of his House colleagues on both sides of the aisle, but refuse to apologize. I can put up another controversial post tomorrow if you want me to. I mean, we do have freedom of speech. I'll say what I want," he told CNN later that day. And although Higgins did eventually try to walk his initial post back, clarifying that he was really referring to Haitian gangs, the sentiment he shared with CNN is right. The lawmaker can put up another vile post maligning an entire country whenever he desires. Not because of his right to free speech, which exists to protect against government interference, but because of how Musk chooses to operate his platform. Despite the social network's policy that prohibits incitement of harassment, X seemingly took no issue with Higgins's racist post or its potential to cause real-world harm for Springfield residents. The town has already closed and evacuated its schools twice because of bomb threats. And why would X care? The platform, which reinstated thousands of banned accounts following Musk's takeover in 2022, accounts that belonged to QAnon supporters, political hucksters, conspiracy theorists, and at least one bona fide neo-Nazi, is so inundated with bigoted memes, racist AI slop, and unspeakable slurs that Higgins' post seems almost measured by comparison. In the past, when Twitter seemed more interested in enforcing content moderation standards, the lawmaker's comments may have resulted in a ban or some other disciplinary response. On X, he found an eager, sympathetic audience willing to amplify his hateful message. His deleted post is instructive, though, as a way to measure the degradation of X under Musk. The site is a political project run by a politically radicalized centibillionaire. The worthwhile parts of Twitter, real-time news, sports, culture, silly memes, spontaneous encounters with celebrity accounts, have been drowned out by hateful garbage. X is no longer a social media site with a white supremacy problem, but a white supremacist site with a social media problem. Musk has certainly bent the social network to support his politics, which has recently involved joking on Tucker Carlson's show, which streams on X, that nobody is even bothering to try to kill Kamala, and repurposing the @America handle from an inactive user to turn it into a megaphone for his pro-Trump super PAC. Musk has also quite clearly re-engineered the site so that users see him and his tweets whether or not they follow him. When Musk announced his intent to purchase Twitter in April 2022, the New York Times columnist Ezra Klein aptly noted that Musk reveals what he wants Twitter to be by how he acts on it. By this logic, it would seem that X is vying to be the official propaganda outlet not just for Trump generally, but also for the Great Replacement Theory, which states that there is a global plot to eradicate the white race and its culture through immigration. In just the past year, Musk has endorsed multiple posts about the conspiracy theory. In November 2023, in response to a user named Breaking Bot, who accused Jews of supporting bringing hordes of minorities into the United States, Musk replied, "You have said the actual truth." Musk's post was viewed more than 8 million times. Though Musk has publicly claimed that he doesn't subscribe to the Great Replacement Theory, he appears obsessed with the idea that Republican voters in America are under attack from immigrants. Last December, he posted a misleading graph suggesting that the number of immigrants arriving illegally was overtaking domestic birth rates. He has repeatedly referenced a supposed Democratic plot to legalize vast numbers of illegals and put an end to fair elections. He has falsely suggested that the Biden administration was flying asylum seekers who were fast-tracked to citizenship directly into swing states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Arizona, and argued that soon everywhere in America will be like the nightmare that is downtown San Francisco. According to a recent Bloomberg analysis of 53,000 of Musk's posts, the billionaire has posted more about immigration and voter fraud than any other topic, more than 1,300 posts in total, garnering roughly 10 billion views. But Musk's interests extend beyond the United States. This summer, during a period of unrest and rioting in the United Kingdom over a mass stabbing that killed 3 children, the centibillionaire used his account to suggest that a civil war there was inevitable. He also shared, and subsequently deleted, a conspiracy theory that the UK government was building detainment camps for people rioting against Muslims. Additionally, X was instrumental in spreading misinformation and fueling outrage among far-right anti-immigration protesters. In Springfield, Ohio, X played a similar role as a conduit for white supremacists and far-right extremists to fuel real-world harm. One of the groups taking credit for singling out Springfield's Haitian community was Blood Tribe, a neo-Nazi group known for marching through city streets waving swastikas. Blood Tribe had been focused on the town for months, but not until prominent ex-accounts, including Musk's, J.D. Vance's, and Trump's, seized on a Facebook account from the region did Springfield become a national target. It is no coincidence that there was an online rumor mill ready to amplify any social media posts about Springfield, because Blood Tribe has been targeting the town in an effort to stoke racial resentment against subhuman Haitians, the journalist Robert Trusinski wrote recently. Trusinski argues that social media channels like X have been instrumental in transferring neo-Nazi propaganda into the public consciousness, all the way to the presidential debate stage. He is right. Musk's platform has become a political tool for stoking racial hatred online and translating it into harassment in the physical world. The ability to drag fringe ideas and theories into mainstream political discourse has long been a hallmark of X, even back when it was known as Twitter. There's always been a trade-off with the platform's ability to narrow the distance between activists and people in positions of power. Social justice movements such as the Arab Spring and Black Lives Matter owe some of the success of their early organizing efforts to the platform. I'm going to interrupt the article just for a second to remind those of you that may have tuned in late, this is the Atlantic Magazine program brought to you by SunSounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your SunSounds volunteer reader, and I'm reading from the Internet edition of the Atlantic articles that were published in November of 2024. Continuing on with our article about Musk and the X platform, yet the website has also been one of the most reliable mainstream destinations on the Internet to see photoshopped images of public figures or their family members in gas chambers or crude racist cartoons of Jewish men. Now, under Musk's stewardship, X seems to run in only one direction, The platform eschews healthy conversation. It abhors nuance, instead favoring constant escalation and engagement-baiting behavior. And it empowers movements that seek to enrage and divide. In April, an NBC News investigation found that at least 150 paid premium subscriber X accounts and thousands of unpaid accounts have posted or amplified pro-Nazi content on X in recent months. According to research from the extremism expert Colin Henry, since Musk's purchase, there's been a decline in anti-Semitic posts on 4chan's infamous Anything Goes forum, and a simultaneously rise in posts targeting Jewish people on X. X's own transparency report showed that the social network has allowed hateful content to flourish on its site. In its last report before Musk's acquisition, in just the second half of 2021, Twitter suspended about 104,000 of the more than 5 million accounts reported for hateful conduct. Of the first half of 2024, according to X, the social network received more than 66 million hateful conduct reports, but suspended just 2,361 accounts. It's not a perfect comparison, as the way X reports and analyzes data has changed under Musk, but the company is clearly taking action far less frequently. Because X has made it more difficult for researchers to access data by switching to a paid plan that prices out many academics, it is now difficult to get a quantitative understanding of the platform's degradation. The statistics that do exist are alarming. Research from the Center for Countering Digital Hate found that in just the first month of Musk's ownership, anti-Black American slurs used on the platform increased by 202%. The Anti-Defamation League found that anti-Semitic tweets on the platform increased by 61% in just 2 weeks after Musk's takeover. But much of the evidence is anecdotal. The Washington Post summed up a recent report from the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, noting that pro-Hitler content reached the largest audiences on X relative to other social media platforms, where it was also most likely to be recommended via the site's algorithm. Since Musk took over, X has done the following. Seemingly failed to block a misleading advertisement post purchased by Jason Cohn, a white nationalist with the handle No White Guilt NWG. Seemingly failed to block an advertisement calling to reinstate the death penalty for gay people. Reportedly run ads on 20 racist and anti-Semitic hashtags, including hashtag white power, despite Musk pledging that he would demonetize posts that included hate speech. After NBC asked about these, X removed the ability for users to search for some of these hashtags. Granted blue check verification to an account with the N-word in its handle. The account has since been suspended. Allowed an account that praised Hitler to purchase a gold check badge, which denotes an official organization and is typically used by brands such as Doritos and BlackRock. This account has since been suspended. Seemingly failed to take immediate action on 63 of 66 accounts flagged for disseminating AI-generated Nazi memes from 4chan. More than half of the posts were made by paid accounts with verified badges, according to research by the nonprofit Center for Countering Digital Hate. None of this is accidental. The output of a platform tells you what it is designed to do. In X's case, all of this is proof of a system engineered to give voice to hateful ideas and reward those who espouse them. If one is to judge X by its main exports, then X, as it exists now under Musk, is a white supremacist website. You might scoff at this notion, especially if you, like me, have spent nearly 2 decades willingly logged on to the site, or if you, like me, have had your professional life influenced in surprising, occasionally delightful ways by the platform. Even now I can scroll through the site's algorithmic pond scum and find things worth saving. Interesting commentary, breaking news, posts, and observations that make me laugh. But these exceptional morsels are what make the platform so insidious, in part because they give cover to the true political project that X now represents and empowers. As I was preparing to write this story, I visited some of the most vile corners of the Internet. I've monitored these spaces for years, and yet this time I was struck by how little distance there was between them and what X has become. It is impossible to ignore. The difference between X and a known hateful site, such as Gab, are people like myself. The majority of users are no doubt creators, businesses, journalists, celebrities, political junkies, sports fans, and other perfectly normal people who hold their nose and cling to the site. We are the human shield of respectability that keeps Musk's disastrous $44 billion investment from being little more than an algorithmic-powered stormfront. The justifications, the lure of the community, the now limited ability to bear witness to news in real time, and of the reach of one's audience of followers, feel particularly weak today. X's cultural impact is still real, but its promotional use is non-existent. A recent post linking to a story of mine generated 289,000 impressions and 12,900 interactions, but only 948 link clicks, a click rate of roughly 0.00328276.82%. NPR, which left the platform in April 2023, reported almost negligible declines in traffic referrals after abandoning the site. Continuing to post on X has been undefensible for some time, but now, more than ever, there is no good justification for adding one's name to X's list of active users. To leave the platform, some have argued, is to cede an important ideological battleground to the right. I've been sympathetic to this line of thinking, but the battle on this particular platform is lost. As long as Musk owns the site, its architecture will favor his political allies. If you see posting to X as a fight, then no, it is not a fair one. For example, in October, Musk shared a fake screenshot of an Atlantic article, manipulated to show a fake headline. His post, which he never deleted, garnered more than 18 million views. The Atlantic's X post, debunking Musk's claim, received just 28,000 views. Musk is unfathomably rich. He's used that money to purchase a platform, take it private, and effectively turn it into a megaphone for the world's loudest racist. Now he's attempting to use it to elect a corrupt, election-denying felon to the presidency. To stay on X is not an explicit endorsement of this behavior, but it does help enable it. I'm not at all suggesting, as Musk has previously alleged, that the site be shut down, or that Musk should be silenced. But there's no need to stick around and listen. Why allow Musk to appear even slightly more credible by lending our names, our brands, and our movements to a platform that makes the world more dangerous for real people? To my dismay, I've hid from these questions for too long. Now that I've confronted them, I have no good answers. And that completes the article, X is a White Supremacist Site, by Atlantic staff writer Charlie Warzel. The final article today is Democracy Is Not Over by Tom Nichols. An aspiring fascist is the president-elect again of the United States. This is our political reality. Donald Trump is going to bring a claque of opportunists and kooks led by the vice president-elect, a person who once compared Trump to Hitler, into government this winter. And even if senescence overtakes the president-elect, Trump's minions will continue his assault on democracy, the rule of law, and the Constitution. The urge to cast blame will be overwhelming because there's so much of it to go around. When the history of this dark moment is written, those responsible will include not only Trump voters, but also easily gulled Americans who didn't vote, or who voted for independent or third-party candidates because of their own selfish peeves. Trump's opponents will also blame Russia and other malign powers. Without a doubt, America's enemies, some of whom dearly hoped for a Trump win, made efforts to flood the public square with propaganda. According to federal and state government reports, several bomb threats that appeared to originate from Russian email domains were aimed at areas with minority voters. But as always, the power to stop Trump rested with American voters at the ballot box, and blaming others is a pointless exercise. So now what? The first order of business is to redouble every effort to preserve American democracy. If I may invoke Winston Churchill, this is not the end or the beginning of the end. It is the end of the beginning. For a decade, Trump has been trying to destroy America's constitutional order. His election in 2016 was something like a prank gone very wrong, and he likely never expected to win. But once in office, he and his administration became a rocket sled of corruption, chaos, and sedition. Trump's lawlessness finally caught up with him after he was forced from office by the electorate. He knew that his only hope was to return to the presidency and destroy the last instruments of accountability. Paradoxically, however, Trump's reckless venality is a reason for hope. Trump has the soul of a fascist, but the mind of a disordered child. He will likely be surrounded by terrible but incompetent people. All of them can be beaten, in court, in Congress, in state houses around the nation, and in the public arena. America is a federal republic, and the states, at least those in the Union that will still care about democracy, have ways to protect their citizens from a rogue president. Nothing is inevitable, and democracy will not fall overnight. Do not misunderstand me. I'm not counseling complacency. Trump's re-election is a national emergency. If we have learned anything from the past several years, it's that feel-good, performative politics can't win elections. But if there was ever a time to exercise the American right of free assembly, it is now. Not least because Trump is determined to end such rights and silence his opponents. Americans must stay engaged and make their voices heard at every turn. They should find support, organizations, and institutions committed to American democracy, and especially those determined to fight Trump in the courts. They must encourage candidates in the coming 2026 elections who will oppose Trump's plans and challenge his legislative enablers. After Barack Obama was elected president in 2008, then Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell vowed to make Obama a one-term president and obstructed him at every turn. McConnell, of course, cared only about seizing power for his party, and later he could not muster that same bravado when faced with Trump's assaults on the government. Patriotic Americans and their representatives might now make a similar commitment, but for better aims. Although they cannot remove Trump from office, they can declare their determination to prevent Trump from implementing the ghastly policies he committed himself to while campaigning. The kinds of actions that will stop Trump from destroying America in 2025 are the same ones that stopped many of his plans the first time around. They are not flashy, and they will require sustained attention, because the next battles for democracy will be fought by lawyers and legislators in Washington and in every state capital. They will be fought by citizens banding together in associations and movements to rouse others from the sleepwalk that has led America into this moment. Trump's victory is a grim day for the United States and for democracies around the world. You have every right to be appalled, saddened, shocked, and frightened. Soon, however, you should dust yourself off, square your shoulders, and take a deep breath. Americans who care about democracy have work to do. And that completes the article. The title is Democracy Is Not Over by Tom Nichols. Because that last article was such a short one, I'm going to end with Dear James. Dear James is the Atlantic's answer to Dear Abby. His title is Dear James, I Hate My Post-College Life. I'm Utterly Lost. Dear James, I'm a young adult who recently graduated from college, finally getting a taste of the real world, and I hate it. No longer bound by classes or any requirements, I am feeling more lost than ever. The realization that I am truly free to do anything I want is absolutely suffocating. I have never felt anxious in my life. Now that I find myself in this world that is boundless and full of potential, I feel like a dog that finally caught the ball but has no idea what to do with it. Dear reader, what a beautiful letter. I'm going to draw a distinction here between the real world, which you, quite properly for a young person, hate, and the world that is boundless and full of potential, which is something else. In fact, we might even say that the former was created to help us manage or cope with the latter. The real world is the mind-blowingly elaborate fiction of jobs, cell phones, forks, toll booths, Hulu passwords, and dental appointments that engulfs us every day and consumes us completely. The boundless world is the radiance of existence itself, always pushing through and generous without limit. And as my first shrink used to say, his ginger eyebrows flying, I think what we're looking for here is a balance. Too cloudy? Too mystical sounding? I hope not, because the real world, without the boundless world, is a nightmare. A hollow, clanging procession of days, similarly an excess of boundlessness, can do your head in. You want that crunch of necessity now and again to stop you from floating off altogether. And the two worlds are not opposed or out of sympathy. William Blake said it, "Eternity is in love with the productions of time." Here's a thought for you. You are not, actually, free to do anything you want. You are constrained by who you are and where you are, and, if you want to do something seriously, what you're good at. This should come as a relief. The options are not infinite. So then it becomes a matter of discernment, of learning what works for you, where you connect, of allowing the two realms, the boundless and the finite, to negotiate with each other via the medium of you, of waiting, basically, for the deeper design of your life to reveal itself. which can take a while, which can drive you nuts. On a dark day, it might look like chaos, antagonism, dog-eat-dog that caught the ball. But have faith. The deeper design is there. The lack you feel so acutely right now is what's all alerting you to its presence. One day, when you look back, it will be glowingly obvious. But we can only live forward, can't we? Groping and blundering into the possible. The trick is to keep going. Hang in there, young adult. Signed, James. And that completes the program today. This has been the Atlantic Magazine program, brought to you by Sunsounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader today. The articles I read today were published in November in the online edition of the Atlantic Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you found it informative as well. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week. Keep listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. And if you missed a program you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website. Click on the broadcast info and audio, and then click on Demand. On the next page, you'll see a list of articles that are available to you. Hopefully, you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.